stats are important and significant, especially when you don't allow yourself to get clouded with the statistics and the numbers. Behind every number, there's a human, there's a person, there's a family, there's a story. And when we learn that, legislation that can save one, two, three, four, five lives a day is more than worth it. There's a lot more work that needs to be done, but
Maxwell,
I think these are important steps.
Alejandro Frost, want to thank you for being with us. Won the Democratic primary, first generation Z-er. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 and 107.3 FM. This program has been brought to you today by the Tom Bastilio and Mickey Conlin team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, hosts of the Jazz Loft Summer Music Series in Stony Brook Village. The Tom Bastilio and Mickey Conlin team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate may be reached at tomandmickey.com. We thank them for their support of WUSB Stony Brook.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. as I choke. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I just took a sip of coffee. It just went down the wrong way.
It happens.
What is it that happens? It goes down. There's only one way. I mean, come on. There's no other way to go. But you ever do that where you're not even drinking something and you just sort of swallow wrong and you're coughing for the next 10 minutes? Hate that. I hate it when it happens on the radio. But it's not going to happen today. It's another edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here. Kyle over there.
Hi.
No, wait. That's wrong. Okay. Kyle, you've made some massive improvements. In fact, I haven't seen you for a week because you've been inside the studio hammering and cursing and all kinds of other things. But what you've done is you have upgraded us so that we are now, after over 2 years of doing this, we are now fully stereo, coming from the remote facility to the main facility. And what that means is that we can, music will be more appreciated, I think. But also, I can do things like move to the left. Wait a minute. I'm in the right. Are my headphones on backwards?
They might be.
How do you know? How do you know if your headphones are on backwards? Okay, I'm going to turn my headphones around. Hold on. Okay, now. Oh, yeah, okay, I'm in the left ear now.
Okay.
And people, if it's happening to you, just, you know, rewire your speakers or your headphones as well. This should be the left.
How long are you going to be over there?
Why don't you go over there?
Okay.
Oh, that's better.
Oh, man.
You see, what we can do now is our long sought-after dream where we don't have to listen to each other.
That's right.
We can both talk at the same time.
Okay.
And people can choose which one of us they want to hear.
That's right.
Two shows for the price of one.
But we have
to talk at the same time. You can't listen to me.
No,
see,
I
listening.
Can't.
That's the problem.
No, I can't
you're
hear you.
You're pausing when I talk.
Well,
see, that's a very bad
that
habit to have. That's
going.
Not how the political system
but
works anymore.
Just
you talk at the same time. If
just,
CNN
no.
only
but,
had
but
a handle on this, they could have all kinds of people
time,
talking at the same time, and you know what? No one listens to each other, but you can pick which one you listen to. You can do that. Absolutely. We were told to stop.
Oh, you did that.
I didn't do anything.
I thought the
Frank, the chief engineer, is able to somehow reach in here and control the remote. Any studio that connects to WUSB, he can control. Try it. If you have a studio out there, listeners, try connecting to us, and you'll be under Frank's control. That's how it works. But we knew that going in.
Okay.
All right. No, we were abusing it. No, he's right. We were being silly. But I still think it's a good idea. All right.
We're still getting those adjustments fine-tuned.
It's
I thought the
bit.
Board like started
rough process.
On fire or something. There was like smoke or something.
Not again. No, you can't have that happen twice in one day.
All right. I don't see too much overload and flashing lights. So I think
acrid smoke, too.
I think we can continue with this. It's new, and I'll keep refining it, but yeah.
Well, what else is there left now?
No more mono.
What else is there left now? Is that even a sentence? What else is... Hold on a second. What else is there left for us to accomplish here? We could go quad, I suppose, but that never took off.
No, I think this fulfills the most of what people expect.
Dolby? Do you want Dolby?
Right, that would be like multi-speaker. I don't know. You're asking a lot if you want that on a
I'm not asking for it. The listeners demand it.
They can demand all kinds of things.
And they will, and they do. And we're only human, so... Look, it took us this long to get to this stage, so now here we are, and we can sound almost as good as anybody else in the station. Almost.
Yeah, and if we do more stuff, we might be in mono, say if we're in a far-flung place, but from now on...
No, I don't think so, because we have a little portable digital recorder, not stereo.
You're right.
The microphone might not be mono, but who cares? If you're talking to a microphone, why do you have to be stereo? You could be mono. It doesn't matter. You know, you're not going left to right. I don't know.
You're right. There's no going back now.
No, there's no going back.
Why would we do that?
Uh-huh. It's like going back to AM.
It's like, yeah, for fun.
I'd like to broadcast on AM, actually. I would like to do that.
If we were interviewed live somewhere...
I've been interviewed on AM, but I've never broadcast a show on AM. Not knowingly, anyway.
But it's all mono. There's no physical way
There is AM stereo. That's a thing. I don't know if that took off. I don't think it ever really did. They've always been trying to make AM sound better. And then they realize, you know what, this is what we got. And people aren't listening anyway.
Well, this was long planned, and hopefully to complement all the upgrades at the radio station and so forth. So we're doing our best to improve. And there were a lot of delays, and things were hard to get there for a while. Supply and whatever. I don't want to get into all that.
Everything you just said applies to NASA. Yes, they've been delayed. They've been trying hard, and things have been delayed. And, yes, the Artemis project. You want to tell us about this, Carl?
Well, I was really excited about it. I was going to get up early. There was this launch time that was like...
I thought you did get up early.
8:30. No, I did. I did. I was up for it, but it just turned into... hurry up and wait, and they just needed, I guess, some extra time to evaluate broken stuff.
Well, oops, sorry, I fell over to the left. Yeah, maybe as I speak leftist propaganda, I should be over to the left.
I think that is appropriate.
And if I start saying something conservative, I just move over to the right. And
yeah.
I sure hope this is the right channel for everybody else, because we could have it backwards.
Some people might find that soothing as you traverse their oral space. You're just
do you find
around.
This soothing?
When whoa, I go back whoa, and forth?
Because I can do that too. I can go back and forth as fast as the controls will allow.
That's actually really good for the controls. What you did there.
What to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. I can do all the controls. We have about 1,000 buttons here or knobs, and I can just randomly put them in different places. It'll be a fun challenge every week. But no, let's go back to the moon, literally, because that's what they're planning on doing. I don't know why it took so damn long. You know, I was a little kid when they went to the moon the first time and the only time, and finally we're going back. What I don't understand, you know, since everybody now has computing power in their phones that matches what they had to put Neil Armstrong on the moon, why is this still taking so long? You know, why can't we all just be launching people left and right? I know it's a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I just think we should be moving faster. And what happened, what was it, Monday, Sunday? What
yes.
day was that?
Monday morning.
Monday morning. They made it, I think, to the last second. Then all of a sudden it's, whoops, we have a leak. We have a fuel leak. Really? You wait till the last second to realize you have a fuel leak? Isn't that something you should know, like, way ahead of time? I don't know. I don't know the first thing about this. I'm sure there's a very good explanation why it took until the last second. But for those of us who got up early in the morning on a Monday to see this happen, it was, you know, very disappointing.
I was expecting there might be something. There's always weather and stuff like that. But, yeah, it would have been great to kick off the week with this huge and interesting ship going off on this very long voyage around the moon. But we'll have to see when the next opportunity is, and then... hopefully it gets off the ground.
I think it should be called Alice. You know, after the honeymooners, to the moon, Alice. Except they really are sending Alice to the moon this time. A bunch of men are there on the ground. I know, they're more woke than that now, but still. You know, why not? Little nod to the past. The distant past.
I think they're sticking with Snoopy.
Snoopy?
Yeah, the Tallyman is Snoopy when it gets into space and reaches zero gravity, this Tallyman, this...
I don't know what a Tallyman is.
It's an object, yeah. It's usually a toy or like a stuffed plush animal or shape or...
And that's NASA has that? I thought that was the SpaceX
thing. It's typical on a lot of the human spaceflight launches, so that people watching as the astronauts are there, they can see when things are able to float and so forth and anticipate that. So anyway, it's a fun thing that is going to be on this journey.
We can laugh. We can make light of it, but it's a serious issue. And in fact, it bugged Henry Olsen, and he wrote this opinion piece in the Washington Post yesterday. NASA's decision to postpone Monday's planned launch of the Artemis lunar probe is unfortunate. The program needs to get back on track as soon as possible for the benefit of U.S. national security. Most discussions of the Artemis program have focused on the scientific benefits or the sheer adventure of space exploration, like on a certain radio show on Tuesday evenings. It's likely true that the national psyche gets a boost when we see Americans in outer space. It's not really outer space, but I'm going to let it go. I mean, outer space is so huge. you know, Jupiter, that's not even outer space, but whatever, we'll have that discussion some other time. Landing someone on the moon for the first time in decades would be a tangible sign for many that America's can-do spirit is alive and well. The planned trip to Mars, which Artemis is intended to help prepare, would be even more exciting. Those benefits pale, however, in comparison with the military challenges the United States could face if it does not remaster lunar travel promptly. China has announced an ambitious moon program that includes a system to detect and deflect asteroids from hitting Earth, a weapon that would potentially have terrestrial import as well. Yeah, they're developing a system to deflect asteroids from hitting Earth. That sounds like a real threat. Russia and China have also announced plans to establish a joint permanent lunar base by 2027. If successful, this means our most dangerous adversaries could be in a position to harm U.S. interests in space sooner than we had thought. You know what, Henry? Yeah, you know, take a chill pill here. It's launching Friday instead of Monday. You know, it's four days in the future. We'll get there. He's really bent out of shape about this. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why this is threatening to U.S. national security. Control of the high ground and a conflict has been essential to warfare since ancient times. I am just so sick of everything just being relegated to warfare and military advantage and all that kind of thing. You know, we're going to the damn moon, all right? And we'll get there one way or another. Yeah, I'm basically standing up for NASA here, telling them to take as much time as they want, because this kind of thinking that Henry has is just, it's tiresome. Because we've been dealing with it ever since we started making fire. You know, it's always, you got to get a strategic advantage, and these are the enemies, you can never trust them. And oh my God, yeah, there's some element of truth to that, but you can't let it run everything you do. You can't let it dictate your every waking thought, which is what Henry did there. He got it printed in the Washington Post. Well, good for him. I have no idea who Henry Olsen is, and they don't tell me in this editorial. But he probably is somebody connected to the military in one way or another who's really upset that we're not on our way to the moon to gain an advantage over our worst adversary. I thought our worst adversaries were Iran and North Korea, you know, and liberals and things like that. But I guess not. I guess there's always a new enemy. And you know what? There's enemies out there in space, too. I can hardly wait till the right wing gets their hands or just eyes on what's waiting for us in true outer space.
Can you imagine how liberal they are?
I'm sure they're... I bet they have health care. I bet they have health care. And I'm sure their fuel is plentiful and green, probably literally, and all sorts of things, you know? Yeah. We are so afraid of anyone who looks a little different. Can you imagine how people are going to react to creatures that are not people? Because they won't be people. They won't look like us. I mean, the odds of another intelligent life form looking anything remotely like us, astronomical. Because there's a series of accidents and things that are unique to this planet that made us what we are right now. So, you know, Every different sized planet, every different elements of an atmosphere, it all dictates what kind of a creature you become.
Certainly. And so we're bound to, I don't know, maybe this is a sign we're not totally ready to be out there.
We're never going to be ready.
Exploring.
We're not ready to sort
some of those differences.
We're not ready to go to other countries. You know, we're still not ready for anything challenging, but we have to do it anyway. We have to sort of be forced into it.
Can I? I would thank you and just stop us and in thinking about being familiar with places, being around the world. I am so appreciative of the travel and fun adventures that we've had in some of the places that we're hearing about, because we can at least take some of that familiarity and bring it to our sense of what's going on in the world. And I think it's important. You understand when, you know, there are regions and various different societal things at play, different things than anything you experience where you're from. And I think that is so helpful in not applying the types of things that concern us to every situation around the world. There has to be some local uniqueness distinction and you have to be able to experience that firsthand. You can't kind of make a ton of assumptions from a distance and then think you really understand how the world works.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry, I'm over here on the right now.
You're right.
I should be more centered.
You're...
It takes a certain kind of person to embrace that, too, because we went to New York City a few days ago, and I have to say, I've heard so many horror stories from all the usual suspects, people that are constantly trying to make us afraid, and I was, a little worried what New York City might be like. And I got to tell you, it's as magical as it's ever been. Is there crime? Of course there's crime. There's always been crime. There always will be crime. But we basically were hanging out in various parts of Manhattan, and it seemed like the city is really back, you know, in earnest this time. Places are open late. We were in establishments after midnight that were just more people were piling in on a weekday. You know, and that is the magic of New York City. People just very friendly and just open, and also riding around on all kinds of bikes now everywhere. And the thing that really was rather heartening, very, very few cops, at least being visible. And that always kind of added a negative feel to things.
Especially in the fun places.
But I'm not talking about, you know, safety and having somebody there to deal with situations. That's important. I get that. What's not important is to have people with helmets glaring at you on every corner, or, you know, someone riding around on a horse where it's not necessary, or driving a car through a park. You know, these shows of force that NYPD has been known for over the years. Well, maybe it's changed. Maybe Adams is actually getting something done. I don't know. But I didn't notice that. I think I could count on one hand the number of cop cars I saw in the full day and night that that we were around. And that is a good feeling. So, going to that foreign place, New York City, which a lot of people are nervous about going to, I have to say, I don't think you have anything to be nervous about. I really don't. And I would suggest people go in there and have fun and explore. It's transitional now, but it's getting busier. Things are starting to sprout again, and we need that. We need that so badly.
Yeah, you get a real sense of vibrancy, especially visiting and, I don't know, being around everyone. And there's people are busy. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people trying to get things done. It's been a long time since there have been so many visitors and things going on. But life does move ahead, and you ache for the, you know, what was lost, but you know that being around others and supporting different venues and places and just experiencing what life has to offer, trying to take it in, and that was great, because it was too long since we had been able to be able to visit and share that experience with everybody. And
it's good to see things changing in a positive way. Like I said, more people riding bikes, more bike lanes. The traffic congestion thing is coming up, where basically more cars will be discouraged from going in and out of Manhattan. And I know that might be bad for some people, that's their livelihood, but, you know, things will be passed along. There will be exceptions. This is good for the environment. This is good for people walking around. It's good for the city overall. Pollution is not a good thing.
I'm just thinking of examples. You're jogging my memory, too. Just the streets that would be closed in some cases, whether it's for, like, a farmer's market or for people just have that area as a pedestrian walkway. That stuff is new, and like we saw some announcements for new hardened bike lanes, and it's not just that people are making use of what's there. There's going to be even more, so that there's these corridors and places that lots of business activity and everyday life can get on by bicycle in the city like that.
Yeah.
And there's still shelters and stuff, but they're kind of fewer and far between and, like, really kind of sturdy, and there's all kinds of paint and murals on everything. And it's just, you can tell definitely, like, getting character and that space itself is this new form, right. I think, that it makes parking a little bit harder, and maybe that's...
It does make parking harder, I will say,
but
that.
But that's good for the environment, too.
I was cruising around for a good half hour looking for a space. Well, I found a space in the end.
Everybody's talking. Anybody who drives is talking about trying to park.
But that's a worthy sacrifice for a better city. And, you know, more of those outdoor places, if they're in use, definitely those are preferable. My only suggestion to the city... you can't park in front of a fire hydrant. You can't park in front of a church. I don't really understand the logic of not parking in front of a church, but fine. Why don't you put the fire hydrants in front of the churches? Just an idea. You know, you get more parking spaces that way, and I don't know. But it's just great going in there and seeing that, seeing Moynihan Hall being built up. You know, of course, you know, not very happy with what they're doing with Hotel Pennsylvania. But I do like to see improvements in mass transit. We use the Omni system for the first time. This allows you to use a credit card, just, you know, slap it onto the turnstile, boom, you're in, and you get a transfer from that as well. And there's ways you can do it anonymously. In addition, I'm learning more about this system, but it's a brand-new system that will be fully in place, replacing the MetroCard in about a year and a half, I think.
Yeah, definitely that transition phase is well underway, and that tapping of the payment method or using your phone seems to be mostly what people use now, unless you have some of the older systems or want to pay another way. But, yeah, just seeing some of the improvements and expansion of those systems is kind of interesting, and just getting more and more utilized and in better ways. I think they're improving some of Penn Station, too.
They're going to rebuild the whole thing again. I don't know. I know it's not the best plan either. They could have done a much better job. But it'll be better than it is now, I'll say that. But it could have been so much better in addition.
That whole design, like they're changing what Madison Square Garden is. It's like this giant kind of four-story level that juts out in front of it, and tons of huge iron structures to hold it up, and it seems like it's going to be pretty spectacular.
Well, but what really has to happen is that local shops, mom and pop shops, people who live in the area, they need to be able to make a living running their stores. We can't have landlords dictating terms to the degree they have been, where so many places have been literally run out of town because they can't afford the rising rent. And the way it works is landlords get more of a tax write-off just by having vacant stores, which is, you know, you might ask, well, if there's so many vacant stores, why don't they just rent it at a lower price? No, they make more money by having them stay vacant. That's got to change. That really has to change. There are so many amazing places just in the East Village alone that I can think of that are no longer there because of greedy landlords, no other reason. So, you know, the solution is either everybody owns their own buildings or we don't have this kind of a predatory system anymore. Because, you know, the magic of New York is the fact that there is so much variety, so much diversity, and not so much of an emphasis on big box stores and franchises and things like that. Yeah, it's there, but not nearly as much as in other cities. And the funny thing is, when the pandemic first struck, the big box stores were the first ones to say, we're not going to pay rent anymore. And even the landlords couldn't do anything about that. And a lot of them left town. A lot of them didn't come back. A lot of them also got PPP loans and made a fortune off of that. But maybe we can learn from that. And maybe we can build something better. I sure hope so. Because while New York has such great potential and promise, there's also, you know, a threat of over-corporatization and basically a move to the right that would crush a lot of these independent spirits that are out there that make the place so magical. So please support it. Go in, support it. Don't be afraid. Don't listen to the naysayers, the idiots out there, and there are so many of them. Speaking of which, going to talk about Lee Zeldin. yeah, Lee Zeldin. He's all, we talked about this last week. He's all bent out of shape over Kathy Hochul suggesting that he get on a bus and go to Florida. And basically what he has done and what all the Republicans seem to have done as well is try and make that, into, one of the, what are the people called again? The, repulsive people, the, you know, the phrase everybody was bent out of shape over 4 years ago.
The deplorables.
The deplorables, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the deplorables. They're trying to make it into one of those, where basically Hochul is saying, okay, all you right-wing people go to Florida. That's not what she said. That's not what she said. She said, you, Lee Zeldin, and a couple of the other worst of the worst. You know, the racist, the sexist, the ignorant idiots, the ones who vote against anything that benefits people, the ones that do whatever Trump tells them to do, those people. You go to Florida. Yeah. So, Lee Zeldin, the bus is for you, not for your constituents. I don't want the people around here to leave. No. A lot of them are really misguided because you lie to them and you tell them things and they believe you. But no. It's the comment was meant for you, so don't try and twist that into something else and make it seem like Kathy Hochul is saying, anybody who disagrees with me, I want to move to Florida. That's not at all what she said, but that is what Lee Zeldin is telling people. What he said earlier today, this is classic on Twitter. We're going to talk about the student loan forgiveness in a moment. But basically, as you might know, he is dead set against that because it benefits people. Yeah, a welder who opted for trade school over college shouldn't be forced to contribute one red penny to paying back the student loan of an Ivy League educated lawyer. Okay, a lot to unpack there. First of all, this one red penny thing, you don't want to contribute anything that benefits anybody else. I get it. You're a selfish prick. We all know that. You've basically run on that platform forever. Fine. I don't know why you're targeting Ivy League educated lawyers. I guess they're your biggest enemy.
That's class warfare right there.
Class warfare?
It's the setup for, you know, they're the elites, and it's mildly, well, I don't want to go there, but
and
yeah.
A welder opted for trades. What, this is supposed to be the bottom of the barrel, a welder? I bet any welder could do a better job than the job you've done. You know, any person could do a better job because you haven't been doing the job at all. You've just been running for governor. And basically carrying Trump's train, you know, the thing that you drag behind you. It's like a cloak, that kind of train. Because Trump hates trains. Real trains. Anyway, so yeah, I just want to read that one more time without my comments. A welder who opted for trade school over college shouldn't be forced to contribute one red penny to paying back the student loan of an Ivy League educated lawyer. This guy named Joshua Holland jumped on this before anybody else had a chance to and basically replied by saying, a welder who opted for trade school over college very likely has student loan debt and will see some relief. Elitists like Lee Zeldin are so out of touch with working people that they don't even know that people who attend trade schools rack up piles of student loan debt. Lee Zeldin deleted his tweet. Yeah. So I have one of the last remaining copies of it here. But yeah, this is the kind of ignorance that we have to fight every day from these people. It's terrible. It's awful. Now, the student loan relief, I think it's a great thing. I think it's really pretty amazing. It's another victory for Biden because he's basically helping people who need the help, and he's more or less following through on another campaign promise. So these are good things, and think of the people who are being helped here. Now, despite what critics may say, this is from Axios, student loan debtors who stand to benefit most from the relief plan announced last week aren't exactly latte-sipping elites. First, nearly 90% of those benefiting from the policy earn less than $75,000. Second, a significant percentage of student loan debtors didn't get a four-year degree. That means they also don't get the income boost of a bachelor's degree. Yeah, many Americans, understandably but mistakenly, assume that the vast majority of student loan debtors have four-year degrees when, in fact, about half do not. That's according to Aaron Sojourner, a labor economist at the Upjohn Institute. Basically, Sojourner looked at data for those who borrowed money and started college in 2011. He found that after 6 years, majority didn't have a bachelor's. 34% hadn't attained a degree, 11% graduated from a two-year program, 10% received a professional certificate, like from a trade school. And his data is in line with the White House estimates that nearly one-third of borrowers have debt but no degree. You are ensuring that your little brothers and sisters have what they need for school, Gabrielle Perry, a 29-year-old African-American woman, said to the Associated Press. You are helping your parents pay off their rent, their house, so your quote-unquote wealth doesn't even have time to be built because you're trying to help your family survive. In fact, black borrowers are disproportionately burdened by student loan debt. A typical black borrower will still owe 95% of their student loan 20 years after starting college, compared to 6% for a white borrower. That's according to a 2019 analysis. And women hold two-thirds of the student loan debt in the U.S., according to a widely cited estimate from the American Association of University Women, with black women holding the most. This is because women earn less than men overall and so take longer to pay back their loans. Often childcare costs add to the financial pressure. This means a narrower band of economic opportunity for women who are less able to build wealth burdened by debt. Women shouldn't have to sacrifice their financial future just to get an education, said Gloria Blackwell, CEO of the AAUW, the American Association of University Women. But, of course, those who didn't go to college at all are still left out of this plan and don't stand to benefit at all. But the bottom line is the two-plus years of the student loan moratorium did benefit a lot of higher-income folks. That's the for the last 2 years. But the policy that was just announced by the Biden administration will mainly serve those who could use the help. There's just no getting around that. What I love is the Republican line of, but that's not fair. Is it fair to somebody who just paid off their entire student loan to now learn that they could get $10,000 taken off, you know, if only they hadn't paid it? Is that fair? No. Is it fair, Republican, that maybe you went to college and you paid less because you went to college 5 years ago than somebody who's going to college now? Is that fair? Is it fair that the guy that was in front of me today made the light and I didn't because he cut me off? No, life isn't fair. All kinds of unfair things happen every single day. But there's always justice in there somewhere. So, yeah, you can always point to a scenario and say, but this person didn't benefit. So what about ism? You never win. You never win with that kind of attitude. This is something that benefits a huge amount of people. It's a really, really good thing. And imagine if everyone supported it. You know, it'd be a really uplifting environment. I know that's not what they want, but I don't think they can get around it this time.
Certainly. Certainly no. This is well done, and so that so many people in a wide swath of those in debt get at least some relief through this program. And, yeah, I mean, that some people didn't get help ever, we shouldn't help anyone in the future at all. Is that kind of absurd logic?
Not one red cent. Remember, Lee Zeldin, not one red cent. Don't pay for anybody else. Uh-uh. Leave a penny, take a penny. No, you take a penny. Never leave a penny. Yeah, that's basically probably how he got to where he is now.
That's okay. Really apt. I don't know how. It's very simple, but apt, and I don't know.
It's pretty apt, yeah.
Did you work on that? That's incredible. Yeah,
you
exactly.
You saw me rehearsing before the
show. Mentality.
Yeah. Look, he took great umbrage at being suggested that he go to Florida, but you know he really wants to go to Florida. And, you know, I will.
More.
It's illegal to bet on the air. I attended that meeting. Basically, what I can say, though, is if I were a gambling man, I would say that it's a sure thing that in 5 years, 5 years after Lee Zeldin loses this ill-fated campaign for governor, he will be residing somewhere in Florida, close to his master. That's just, if I were a gambling man, I would take that bet. I would. Not sure where I'd place it exactly, but I'm almost certain. Because, you know, Florida, yeah, it's not a nanny state. It's warmer and they can embrace climate change down there. And Trump is right around the corner. He's always going to be there.
Lots of reptiles.
I just said Trump's going to be there.
Yeah, and invertebrates.
Okay, you know
and
what? We should.
He would fit in there.
He would totally fit in there.
Without spines.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
So what I want to do now is basically talk about the future of Lee Zeldin's seat, because he's running for governor. He couldn't figure out a way to keep his seat and run for governor at the same time, so he had to give up his seat. And now we have a chance to basically improve things around here. And let's hope we do. Someone who actually does the job, someone who actually represents people. We had three candidates run last Tuesday, for the Republican primary. They still are named Nick LaLotta of Amityville, Anthony Figliola of East Setauket, and Michelle Bond of Port Jefferson. Now, I didn't really follow this race very much, but I did notice that Nick LaLotta had this really ugly ad that was on TV, where basically he was accusing Michelle Bond from Port Jefferson, another Republican, of being a liberal because she didn't agree with Trump all the time. And it was scary. It was a scary type of an ad because he's basically calling somebody out for being an individual or being perceived to be an individual. And it was very McCarthy-esque. And, well, needless to say, that's the guy who won, overwhelmingly, because he was the choice of the Republican Party, and he was the lackey of Trump more than anybody else, although all three of them, pretty shameful. But he also doesn't live in the 1st Congressional District, I should point out. Yeah, there's that. Does that matter anymore? Does anybody care? He doesn't live in the district. But he says he's put his Amityville home up for sale and will relocate to a home in the district. Okay, folks. So his home is up for sale in Amityville. What can we do? What can we do to make this process as long and drawn out as possible so that he's still in Amityville and not in the 1st Congressional District when election time runs around and his opponent can get a lot of barbs in?
He's like,
I'm not suggesting that. It's just a joke, but still, it would be funny.
Like mix-ups with the surveys and the geo.
Or just ghosts upstairs, you know, like the Brady kids did.
Okay, yeah, like a
tape recorder. I've learned so much from them. How to keep somebody from buying your house, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, not that haunted one. Uh-huh. The other haunted one.
Wait, Amityville? The Amityville Horror, for God's sake. That is the Amityville Horror. Your house, LaLotta, is the Amityville Horror. You thought you could get away with it, huh? You thought you could sell the house. No. And by the time anyone figures out where the Amityville Horror actually is, the damage will be done, you know? He won't be able to sell this.
Just when it sounds believable.
Yeah. Don't fall for it, people. Don't fall for it. Among the positions that LaLotta has expressed and posted on his campaign website are support for voter identification and limiting absentee ballots. In other words, less voting. Make it as difficult as possible in a place where it's not a problem.
Yeah, that's when we use less participation in our system that is badly needs an invigoration of new candidates and fresh ideas. But no, let's do less voting.
By the way, I should point out concerning the Amityville Horror, he is allowed to live in that house of hell if he were to serve in the 1st Congressional District.
While it's possessed?
He has to live in the state. But it's bad if he doesn't live in the district he represents. It just looks bad. It's a bad look. Not as bad as living in the Amityville Horror, but it's a bad look as far as just, you know, you're living with the people.
Parachuting politician.
It's like one of those cops that commutes, you know, from Long Island to New York City.
No,
and then complains about the people in New York City.
That's all over, yeah. People that are outside the community, but they have some position of authority over that community.
The proliferation of absentee ballots has also opened the door to fraud by impersonation, he said, although there has been no evidence that absentee balloting, which increased dramatically during the pandemic, led to widespread fraud. In fact, most of the fraud has been from Republicans trying to vote twice for Trump and doing it very badly. He backs former President Donald Trump on, I should just say everything and be done with it, but now I'll give you some specifics here. Economic issues, saying, for most of the last several years, our national and local economies were booming. Such was especially the case under President Trump and the Republican Congress.
Is he required to say that part?
Like, how about how many people died from COVID because we didn't know what we were doing at the time? It's really pretty sad. Abortion? Okay, well, we should celebrate life and protect it, he says, adding that parents should be notified if their child is having an abortion. You can't get an aspirin in schools unless the parents are notified, he added. Yeah. Of course, you know, they're all pro-life, all three of them, but only LaLota is going forward. So that is where to keep our attention now that Zeldin will soon be history.
I just had the thought of, like, them getting confused and thinking that abortion is part of the curriculum in woke schools or something.
Yeah.
They might as well be saying crazy things. It's just...
Well, I don't think most people are falling for it, though.
No, it's worn thin on a voting populace that is pretty well fatigued in a variety of ways.
Who wants to hear some good news?
Fatigued?
I do. Let's have some good news, folks. A 10-year effort led by the folks right here at Stony Brook University. Right, the marine scientists. They're not in the studio, but they're nearby. They created special spawner sanctuaries of hard-shelled clams in the Shinnecock Bay, and they helped to restore the clam populations in a wider area while vastly improving water quality. That's according to a new scientific paper. Clam populations in Shinnecock Bay had collapsed around the time the work was initiated in 2012, with harvest dropping by 99.5%. To reverse the decline, the plan by a team of scientists led by Stony Brook School of Marine and Atmospheric Sciences was to densely seed 64 newly designated spawner sanctuaries with more than 3.2 million seed clams and to designate them no harvest zones. The areas chosen were ideal for the spawning of clams, including peak sediment and seawater conditions, and for the ability to retain larval clams. They were allowed to spawn undisturbed between 2012 and 2019, and the results were dramatic. Spawning within the densely seeded not only thrived, but also transported clams to areas outside the sanctuaries, where clam densities increased more than 18-fold over 7 years, while harvests increased 16-fold over 9 years. That's according to the research paper. And research indicates the higher clam densities led to faster rates of water filtration by clams, and as typical, to as little as 10 days compared with the usual 3 months.
Yeah, that's really, really important for, like, runoff and filtering through all of the organic material that is in the waters and you end up getting cleaner, healthier waters.
This is a really red banner day for Stony Brook, I think. And I like to think that those guys, you know, some of the people involved, have some relief for their student loans. That helped get us there. Yeah, good things. Good things coming out of this place. So, and also, speaking of Shinnecock Nation has their powwow this weekend coming up. Do you know about that?
Yeah. I've been following some of their posts about it, and there's all kinds of activities. It's a multi-day event.
One of the largest American Indian gatherings on the East Coast will be firing up on Labor Day. Shinnecock Indian Powwow. It's an annual Southampton shindig. It's been a continuous event since 1946. It was held privately for the past couple of years because of the pandemic. But, it's happening. So look that up, and I'm sure that it'll be a lot of fun.
There's going to be competitions probably for dancing and all kinds of regalia, music, drums, I'm sure, food, and presentations of all sorts. I don't know. I've not been yet. I'm due. I'm overdue to go out and visit and see what that's like.
News flash. This just in. Mikhail Gorbachev has passed away at the age of 91. Yeah, this happened during our show or shortly before our show. He was out there the whole time. he was around. Very quiet. You didn't hear much from him, but... he was a steadying force, I got to say. He was somebody who changed history. If there was no Mikhail Gorbachev, we'd be in a very, very different world right now. The Soviet Union might have staggered on another few years, or maybe even would still exist today. Who knows? Glasnost, Perestroika wouldn't have happened. And I dare say a lot of freedom probably wouldn't have been achieved. And it's kind of a sad statement that that we lost him in the middle of the horrors that are going on in that part of the world right now. Maybe we remember what he stood for and strive to achieve that. That would be something. So yeah, Mikhail Gorbachev, dead at 91. What else?
Unbelievable! Wow. Yeah.
It's we have a drought here. You know, it's funny when we have droughts, people don't realize we have droughts. In California, it's pretty obvious when there's a drought because everything's on fire. But here, it's just, it hasn't rained in a while, has it? And that's kind of bad because people aren't acting like there's a drought. So we really need to conserve water. We need to basically watch out for the harm that can come from not getting enough water. I'm talking about animals and children and everybody.
Pets.
Yeah, absolutely. This seems to be happening all around the world. You know, Europe is happening. I don't think there's a continent that is not being hit by this. Add to that climate change and rising seawater. Everything we were warned about by scientists in the past and ignored ignorantly. It's all coming true now. It's all coming true. Can we still do something? We can do something. Will it be enough? I don't know. The odds are less than they were a decade ago. Had we listened, maybe they wouldn't be so bad.
I am heartened, but yeah, Mississippi specifically, they're having water issues, lack of drinking water, as well as flooding. Mm-hmm. And then also Pakistan.
Oh, yeah.
They had incredible...
Over 1,000 dead in Pakistan.
Oh, gosh.
Just from flooding.
Incredible. Their country is really suffering. So... I'm heartened by at least people's very clear-eyed look at energy and planning and problem solving with the kind of world we're in, instead of I think ignoring a lot of the red flags and your own dependence in right in front of you. We're really evaluating that and coming to the conclusion that we need to go for the smart and well thought through ways of life and change, trying some other things, having options, having backup plans, and mm-hmm. And being agile and responsive to your neighbors, to the world around us, and the environment that we now live in.
Look what the scientists at Stony Brook were able to accomplish with the clams. You know, that's one thing, but that is the path to finding solutions or just better options.
Well, and it's not all like, oh, we have to make a mechanical clam. It's like, well, how can we use technology? How can we use the information and apply it to the kinds of biological and analog solutions we need in the world? And there's so much you could draw from that attitude. And I just hope that people have that ingenuity and are out there realizing that any kind of worthwhile action they see out there, it could be really impactful. So mm-hmm. So go for it.
Yeah.
Try things.
Yeah, and let's just make this a priority, dealing with these issues, because you hear about them every day, and the future is not bright if we don't do something. We just got this, I guess, addendum to what we were talking about before. People who have paid off their student loans recently, you can still get a refund. Did you know that? Yeah, you can get a refund. This is from the Department of Education Office of Student Loans. They listen to us, apparently. You can get a refund for any payment, including auto debt payments, that you made during the payment pause that began on March 13th, 2020. So if you paid off your loan between March 13th and 2020, you might be able to get a refund for that amount. So, yeah, you can benefit from it. See?
That's really unusual, too. That's like a retroactive ability, grace period that everyone should look at and see if they could benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are out of time. Once again, I want to emphasize that our email address is otw@2600.com. That's how you can write to us. I want to thank Kyle for allowing us to broadcast from the left.
You're welcome. I'm over here now.
Yeah. What, you want to come over here?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I haven't been myself.
Oh, I don't want to be
here. And, yeah,
I have wires
coming out of my ears sometimes. And, but I do enjoy improving things, and I learn a lot while I'm working on stuff. And I don't know. I just want things to be right, you know, and not torture people when we're putting out audio signals.
Yeah, let's try not to torture people, folks. Let's make that our resolution.
Can we just stop that?
Yeah, let's stop that now. You know what I'm in the mood for? I'm in the mood for hearing a song that I'm used to hearing, but instead...
Have you ever had a song stuck in your head?
I have had a song stuck in my head many times, but how about having it unstuck in my head, but in Japanese instead? What about that? Good night. We'll see you next week.
So long.
It's the time of day and night. Wayne Coyne could sing in Japanese, huh? Who knew? This is WUSB Stony Brook.